Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. We're live tonight on Friday the 13th, 2014. If you're superstitious.
I'm not.
To me, it's just another day. But they're going to have a full moon tonight, and they're making a big deal out of that. It just very rarely happens.
And we just need a black cat and a ladder and a...
and a pumpkin and all of it.
Okay.
Well, we've got guests tonight, so we're open if you want to call in. But I want you to, if you do call in, stick to questions for our guests. So the toll-free line to call in is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. And our guests are their husband and wife, and there are some of our authors, and we're going to be talking about their new book. But it's Catherine and Patrick Andries. So you're there, aren't you?
Yeah, we are.
We're glad to be here.
Now, where are you located?
We're in Kansas City, Kansas.
Oh, you're not that far away.
About 4 hours.
I'm always thinking of the time zones, you know, where we're going with the time, so that's not too bad. Okay.
Yeah, we're actually in a suburb called Prairie Village.
Prairie Village, okay.
Oh, I know that place.
Oh, good.
My husband was in the Navy. We were stationed there at Olathe.
Oh, yeah, we used to live in Olathe last year.
Right on the other side in by Kansas City, Kansas. And
yep.
they had a little housing there in Prairie Village. Of course, it wasn't very nice in those days.
I'm sure, this is different.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a big difference. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, it's pretty nice now. We like it.
If I went back today, it wouldn't even be anything like it was back then, I can bet.
Heck, we're talking, what, 70 years?
Well, Gloria was
about 1 year old, yeah,
so yeah, be 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or 50-something years ago, so I think it has changed a little bit, probably.
Oh, I'm
so
sure,
you're
yeah.
There, so I know the area, but it's probably built up a lot.
Yeah, it's just all city now.
Okay. All right. We're going to be talking about their new book that it's at the printers now, and it's due to come off the press.
I think it's actually probably in boxes ready to ship.
In route.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Because we're having our transformation conference next Friday, we start.
A week from today.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be here in plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very excited about that. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We've been watching that. They make sure everything gets here when it's supposed to, and everything is always on deadline. Okay, but Catherine and Patrick, before we start on the book, I always want you to tell people about yourself, your background.
Sure. I've been studying metaphysics for probably the last 25, 30 years. And, of course, I started out on the path because my family didn't have any specific religion, so I was free to choose my own path, which was great. So I started out reading Ruth Montgomery and Edgar Cayce when I was about 13. And then in my later 20s, I was searching for my life purpose. And so I got into intuitive paths such as astrology, palmistry, numerology, and that led me to write my first book, which is with Ozark, which is Soul Choices, Six Paths to Find Your Life Purpose. And at the same time I was doing that work, I was also very much involved with dreams and dream interpretation, and I was studying at a school called the School of Metaphysics, which is where I met my husband, Patrick, and so together we've been teaching, doing readings for people, and writing together for the past 12 years.
Mm, okay. Well, Patrick, tell us something about yourself. How did you get started in all this?
Sure. Well, when I was younger, the thing that always stuck in my mind was how we only use about 10% of our mind's potential. And so I remember pondering, you know, well, wow, what could we do with all that extra potential that we're not even tapping into? But it wasn't really until I was in college that I discovered metaphysics and started really delving into metaphysics. And I started teaching and, you know, learning a lot of different philosophies. And so then that eventually led into a health coaching practice that I had in Chicago. I still do some of that from time to time, but I did that full-time for quite a while up in Chicago, and then my wife and I eventually founded a school up in Chicago, the School of Intuitive Arts and Sciences, because we had enough students that we felt that made sense. So then I did that for quite a while, and then I went back to DePaul to get a science degree in physics and biology, because I've always had an interest in combining science and spirituality and really kind of using scientific methods to look at some of these experiences that people have. And so I went back to do that. And so then, you know, eventually we came up to the Kansas City area. Now I actually work for Unity Village at their Silent Unity Prayer Ministry at the moment, and also the Awakened Whole Life Center, where I do energy healing.
You're up at the headquarters then in Unity Village?
Yes. Yes, I'm at Unity Village right now, and so I work at the Awakened Whole Life Center up there doing three types of energy work. So I do quantum touch and bioenergetic synchronization and also intuitive breathing up there.
Mm. Okay, yeah, we know that area too. My husband was raised in Kansas City. That's why we know the area there too. But, okay, whichever one of you wants to go first, tell of why you decided. Oh, I better tell people what kind of book this is first. Okay. All right, we have published Catherine's other books. This book is a dream book, and it's got a rather strange title called Naked in Public. And so I think originally you had the title as Running Naked in Public, but we've been talking about that. Most of the dream, you're not running. But I think that's about everybody has a dream where they're naked in their dream. But why did you decide to write a dream book?
Well, like I had mentioned, I've been working with my own dreams for the past 15 years and received so much benefit by being able to interpret my dreams, and also at the same time so much fun, because it's really exciting to wake up in the morning and figure out what your dream meant, and then try to think about how your thoughts relate to that dream. And my husband and I love to interpret each other's dreams. And so we said our daughter, who is now 8, would often have dreams and ask us about them as well. She would sometimes have nightmares, and so we wanted to be able to write a book that would help parents and children to understand their dreams, because everybody dreams, and there's a lack of really good dream books available to help people. And so we chose the title because, like you said, it's a very common dream to be caught running naked in public or naked in public and freak out and want to go run for shelter. And so we thought that would be a good, catchy title for people.
The title also has a double meaning, because in a dream, when you're naked, it indicates that you're being honest with yourself and others, because the clothes that we wear, if you think about, like, when you're picking things out of the closet, you pick something out based on how you're feeling. You know, you might look at something and think, oh, you know, I don't really feel like wearing that today. That's not really how I feel today. So in a dream, your clothes then are your outer expression. So when you aren't wearing clothes and you're completely naked, pretty much you have nothing to hide. So you're being completely honest at that point. So as we learn to interpret our dreams, we start becoming honest with ourselves, too. So it has a double meaning there that worked out nicely.
Oh, yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, when you're naked in a dream, usually you feel embarrassed and you're trying to hide or to run, to go somewhere where nobody will see you.
So does that mean you're trying to be honest but you're afraid?
Well, yeah, there's truth to that, because it is true most of the time when people show up naked, they feel comfortable for a while, and then all of a sudden they realize, oh, my word, I'm sitting here in my underwear, or I don't have any clothes on at all. And oftentimes there is embarrassment. But if you think about times when maybe you've opened up to somebody, that's often the reaction that we have. You know, you were honest with yourself, or you were honest with other people, and then later you kind of felt a little bit embarrassed about, you know, what you've revealed. So that's a little bit of an indication, too, of how you're responding to your honesty.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it is an embarrassing dream, but I think everybody has it.
I'm sure 100% everybody has.
It's pretty common. I have talked to people, though, that have shown up naked in their dreams, and they've been fine with it. So maybe they're like some future nudists or something. But some people are more comfortable with it than others.
Oh, okay. But, you know, dream symbolism, I found, is very individual to the person. That's why it's kind of hard to interpret for everybody, because it may mean something specific for just that one person.
Well, what we have utilized over the years is a systematic way, which we call a universal system, because our mode of looking at symbols is based on their function in the physical world. So it's universal to everybody, although there may be some minor cultural differences. So, for example, a car. No matter where you live, unless you live in a remote village where they don't have cars, a car transports our body from point A to point B. And so that is the function. And so we look at what is that in terms of our soul. Well, the physical body is what transports our soul while we're in the physical realm. Therefore, a car relates to the physical body. And so if we use this system of function, then we go beyond individual interpretations. Sometimes there might be a particular personal identification with a symbol. So, for example, animals in a dream represent habits. Now, if somebody, for example, was a zookeeper, they have a particular relationship to animals that most of us don't have. So we would figure that into the interpretation. But we try to keep it universal.
One of the reasons why there's these universal aspects, if you think about people across the world, I mean, even with all of our national differences and personal differences, there's a lot of very basic human experiences that we share. I mean, we all want to be healthy, we want to be happy, and feel like we're being successful in our lives the way that we want to be successful, and we want good things for our families. So those are all universal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but this is what I was taught way back, too, when I was studying metaphysics, that the car represents the personal body. But, you know, some of the dreams, like in mine, you have dreams where you're going too fast, you can't make the car stop, or you're going the wrong direction, or you're going to have a wreck.
Well, then those are things with the body. It's just, you know, it's you. We're talking about you, isn't it?
I guess. What do you think about dreams like that?
Yes, we do talk about dreams like that, where we share the same view of the physical body being represented by a car in a dream. And the reason why is because your subconscious mind would see your body as a vehicle that transports your consciousness from one part to another, just like a car or vehicle would. And then whenever you're looking at how the car shows up in the dream, something like that where you're having an accident or you're feeling like you're out of control on the road, that would be indicating how you're feeling in your life, that your life is running out of control or you're losing control of your body in some way. So a lot of times, you know, we would definitely indicate that that's the kind of dream where you'd want to take a look at if you're pushing yourself too hard or if you're getting enough sleep and taking care of your body the way that you need to, making sure you're getting good, sound nutrition and things like that. So that can be related to what we'd call a health dream, where it's indicating either the health of your body or kind of giving you a warning, you know, to pay attention to what you're doing, or just feeling completely out of control in your life because things, you don't feel like you have a handle on it.
Because I was thinking, I think that's a common dream associated with cars, you know.
Oh,
well,
definitely.
One thing I noticed is it's important. Sometimes you're a passenger in the car, And I don't like those dreams. I mean, I like when I'm the driver. Yeah, I prefer when I'm the driver in the dream. So.
Yeah, those dreams, too, I think a lot of people probably don't like those as much because we like to feel like we're in control of our life. And so whenever you're a passenger in your dream, again, that indicates like you feel like there's other forces in your life that are kind of driving you instead of you really being in control. And most people can relate to that when we describe what's happening because, you know, you may feel like you want to go a certain direction in your life, and then there's all these other forces maybe that are affecting your career where you feel like you just kind of have to go with the flow and just let things, you know, take their course instead of really being able to take control and, you know, go in the direction you really want to be going in.
I was trying to think of some other popular ones. But
oh, well, houses. What? Because houses are always in houses.
I have a lot of rooms about houses, too.
Okay, well, a house, if we go back to the idea of function, a house is where we live physically. So where do we live? Well, we actually live in the mind, right? That's where our attention is. So a house represents your mind. And the more elaborate, if you dream of a beautiful mansion, then you see your mind as very expansive, a lot of valuable information in your mind. If you dream that your house is falling down or that you're living in a shack, that indicates low self-worth, that you don't think much of your mind and don't have a lot of value in your mind. So the condition of the house, where it's at, what house you're dreaming of shows how you're viewing your mind at that place and time.
So many times there's rooms. I mean, they're really convoluted, and they're all over in all these places, and you have to go up weird staircases to get
hallways.
Yeah.
And well, yeah. All the
time. Go ahead.
All the different rooms in a house represent different areas of thinking. So, for example, the kitchen is where you prepare food. So that's the place in your mind where you prepare to wisdom, because food represents wisdom or knowledge. The bedroom is where we sleep, so that represents where we mentally assimilate things. You know, the bathroom would be a place where we purify our thoughts or cleanse ourselves, cleanse the thoughts away from the day.
But then you have the basement, and some of these dreams or houses are so big. You have a basement, and you have many floors, and you have the
I remember one that kept coming to my mind. It was like all these rooms, and they had mattresses everywhere. So I guess it was like these all these people over there, and there's beds everywhere. So I guess there was a whole lot of assimilating going on.
Yeah, that definitely could have been, and you know, the thought that comes to my mind, too, when you describe the house as being kind of convoluted, I would say that you're probably aware, or, you know, especially the time that you had that dream, you were very aware of how vast your mind was. But sometimes, like when we're learning meditation techniques or doing spiritual practices, you know, we get into certain states of consciousness, and we experience it, and we're thinking, oh, this is great. But then sometimes it takes us a while to learn how to get back to that again. And so if your house is kind of convoluted, it might indicate you're aware of a lot of different potentials, but you're not always sure exactly how to get back to those states of mind that you're really wanting to be in. And then with the beds, you know, again, that would tie right in with what you're talking about with the beds. It's something that where you're growing in terms of your awareness of your all of your potential and capacities, but you're still needing to assimilate it, which basically it means you're applying it in your life and really making it a part of yourself.
That makes sense. And I remember a lot of times it's like I'm having trouble finding my way back. So that makes sense to what you said at first. It's like trying to work it back and get back to things. So it's like, yeah,
exactly.
I keep going.
But it's always, there's a basement, but that's always, I don't want to go into the basement.
I don't ever have a basement, I don't think.
Well, yeah, the basement is often where we, you know, throw our junk that we don't want to look at. It's dark. It's sometimes scary. So that's the part of our mind that we would refer to as the unconscious parts of our thinking. So things that we don't want to look at could be traumas from the past. It could be our fears, things that we're not aware of, because a lot of times we don't know what's in our basement, right? We've been throwing junk down there for 20 years. You know, we can't do an inventory of the basement. Just like in our unconscious, there's so many things that we're not aware of that are lurking around in our own minds. So when you do have a dream of going into your basement, that's pretty productive, because you're beginning to uncover what's been hidden or stored away and needs to be looked at, perhaps, and either thrown out if it's no longer useful, or find a use for it.
Interesting.
Yeah, my house always has a lot of floors, and I keep going up and up and up in the in them to, not even an attic, you just keep going up.
Yeah, that's what I would describe as being very similar to Gloria's too, Dolores, is I would describe the same thing, is that you're experiencing and exploring all the different vast levels of consciousness within your mind and becoming aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, and you always have a lot of people.
I'm going to say that.
I'm reading her mind, though.
I'm never alone. There are usually whole crowds of people. No matter where I go, in the house or anything on the street, it's always crowds of people. What does that mean?
Well, people represent different aspects of ourselves. And by an aspect of ourself, I mean a personality trait, a way of thinking. And so whoever appears in your dream means that that was a type of thinking or a way of expressing that you exhibited the previous day. So, for example, if there's a lot of unknown people, those would be unfamiliar aspects of yourself that you were portraying the previous day. If you do know the people in the dream, then what we say is, name the first one or two characteristics about that person that come to your mind. And those are the qualities of yourself that you were bringing out. So, you know, let's say you're dreaming about your best friend, Nancy. Well, then you would say, oh, Nancy is, you know, humorous. So we'd say, okay, so the previous day you were bringing out your humor.
Mm-hmm.
So the dream is always about the dreamer. So other people in the dream are always parts of you.
That's what I've heard.
I've heard the same thing. It all refers back to you and not that person. But mine are always crowds of people that I don't know, but then I'm around crowds of people I don't know anyway.
The other aspect of that I would bring into this too, especially if you're in very large gatherings, like if you're giving a seminar for several hundred people or you're attending one or you're at an airport or somewhere like that, is that when we're in the subconscious mind, when we're dreaming, we also start tapping into what we call the universal mind, and that's where our mind can start tapping into other individuals' consciousness. And so that's where, like, when we're visualizing and we're reaching out for people for help and things like that, we start communicating on those inner realms of the subconscious mind. And so we can start tapping into those larger connections that we have with other individuals. And so when you're around a lot of people, you have many opportunities to see lots of different aspects of yourself, too. So it really goes both ways, that when we're tapping into lots of people, you know, we're also getting all kinds of parts of ourselves reflected back to us at the same time, so it works out nicely.
So you're saying, okay, that part where you're saying you're tapping into the universal consciousness, you're saying on that level you're tapping into, like, all the people that you've been meeting, or you're just tapping into the universal consciousness and that's represented by all those people?
Well, both. I mean, you could be tapping into some people that you do know, but you could also be reaching out to people that you've never physically met, but who are also contributing to things that you're doing. For example, when you're writing a book, you may start tapping into certain people who think the way that you do based on the subject matter of your book, and you may never physically meet them, but their consciousness may contribute quite a bit to your awareness and your insights and things. I mean, when we're sitting there writing and all of a sudden we have this flash of insight, who knows where that comes from? It could be coming from someone else that you're communing with on the inner level, and they may be in alignment with your way of thinking, and all of a sudden you tap into this inspirational idea and you're like, hey, this is great, I've got to write this down. So when we're in our dream state and we're in that universal consciousness state, we could be tapping into, you know, lots of different people that we've never met.
Well, that's true. I never thought of that.
Yeah, it kind of goes along with what we work with in my work, but expressed a little differently. But going back, you were talking about animals. You know, some people...
That was different. When I was reading that in the book, that was different. I had never heard that animals are habits, represent habits.
Well, yeah, if we look at the function of animals, they're pretty habitual. They eat, they sleep, some of them hunt. They don't have imagination. They do have memory, but they don't have imagination. So, therefore, when we dream of an animal, it is a habitual part of ourselves because we also have many habits. Some habits are good and productive, some aren't. So the type of animal will give us more clues as to what type of habitual thinking we're engaged in. So, for example, if you dream of a mosquito biting you, okay, that's a pretty benign habit. It's not going to kill you. If you dream of a lion, you know, coming, charging at you, well, a lion could potentially kill you. So that would be a more serious habit. It could be something like smoking, a physical habit, or a mental habit such as worrying that eventually could, you know, stress you out so bad that it could harm your physical body. So, again, if it's a domestic pet, that would be a habit that we just love and are very attached to, and we couldn't dream of losing that habit or letting it go.
Or what if you did? Yeah, you dreamed that it was dying, though. Then that would be a habit that you are letting go. Would that be?
Yes, that would be a habit. Well, death in a dream indicates change. So that would mean that habit is changing in some way. And when we become sad about things like that in a dream, it's because we're attached to the ways that we express our ways of being. And sometimes when we have to change or let it go, it's sad to us because we've become attached to that way of being. So it is like a grieving process.
I'm sorry, I was talking over you. In the tarot, the death card doesn't mean death. It just means change. So it's the same thing as that.
Yes, and actually the tarot is related to imagery and the meaning of imagery in our consciousness and the inner levels of consciousness also. And so that's a lot of where the understanding of dream symbols comes from. So that's a very good example of how in the tarot deck, the death card was recognized as being a change in the life, and there's a lot of other places where that shows up. And so dreams reflect a lot of that inner understanding too, that intuitive insight.
But I was thinking, what if you had a vicious animal, like you said, that could also apply to fears too, couldn't it?
Right, yes, it could. And if you look at the fears, though, any fear is a false expectation that only appears to be real.
Right.
And so it's something that isn't based on truth. It's your imagination really kind of running wild. And so that could be a habitual use of your mind, your imagination, that you jump to these horrible conclusions without any basis in reality. So again, that could still indicate it's a habit, but then you're just being more specific about what the habit is that you're dealing with.
Yeah. I'm just throwing out dreams that are very common here.
Right. Well, and a common animal, it's a reptile. The snake.
Yeah.
Would that still be a habit? Or I've wondered sometimes if that wasn't Kundalini.
Well, the snake can represent the creative energies also, and there is some movement discussing that. We've moved more toward referring to snakes as being habits because we felt that's how most people could relate to it, although the snake is also an image that's been used for the creative energy because the Kundalini has often been described as a serpent rising up the spine.
Right.
And even in the medical community, the caduceus represents the Kundalini energy rising up the spine. So if the person interpreting the dream has an understanding of that, we would certainly consider that and then look at that context in the dream. But also we would recommend considering a habit also just so that you don't miss a possible meaning that's relevant to the dreamer, because if they don't really have a lot of understanding of the Kundalini, they may see that as some kind of a habit that is scary to them. It could still be related to their creativity, but we would also recommend considering it as a habit first and then adding that into it later if it applies to them.
Well, also in metaphysics, I've heard that the snake represents wisdom.
Well, I think that with the snake representing wisdom, it really goes back to the Kundalini and the creative energy. But we haven't really brought that into the meaning of the snake. And, we do consider it being creative energy because of the Kundalini. But, we look at food as being more related to knowledge because the knowledge nourishes your mind in much the same way that food nourishes the body. And so wisdom is really what becomes of that. As you apply knowledge and it becomes part of you, then it becomes wisdom. So we would look at that aspect of it, too, in the dreams.
I remember there are some basics. It's like food is knowledge.
The car was your body.
Right, and then blood represents one thing and water represents another. I always get them confused.
Well, water we view as how we are using our emotions,
okay.
What's going on emotionally. So if you're having a nice, wonderful swim in the pool in your dream, that means your emotions were very pleasant that day and they were being used for enjoyment. If you're in the ocean and you're drowning, that would mean you're feeling emotionally overwhelmed, which often occurs.
Okay.
Our emotions become overwhelming. So depending on how the water is used in the dream. Whereas blood represents our life force energy, because without it, we cannot survive.
Right.
So, for example, if you're losing blood in a dream or you're bleeding, we would say, okay, what's draining your energy? Basically,
what
in your life is sucking the energy out of you? Is it a job you hate? You know, what is draining your life force?
I remember a long time ago I had one with blood in it, but it seemed like it was just blood all over the floor or something. It wasn't coming from me. It was just blood.
Well, that could be the case, but if you think back to one of our basic foundations of dream interpretation is that your dream is always about you. Even if it's someone in your dream that's dying other than yourself, that person still represents an aspect of yourself. So if there's blood on the floor, you know, somebody's losing blood, so it would indicate some area of your life where maybe your energy is being drained. You know, you're doing something that's actually becoming a drain to you instead of actually energizing you.
That makes sense.
Well, I don't want to get gross, but... What about toilets?
Oh, that's great. Well, that's the great thing about dream interpretation, because since dreams aren't literal, no subject is taboo because it never means what we think. So that's a very common dream. Going to the bathroom means that you're letting go of unneeded or unwanted thoughts, right? When we go to when we physically release, you know, we don't need that anymore. So looking for a toilet is looking for a place to release some unwanted thoughts. And so a common dream is when somebody can't find a toilet.
Yeah,
so
I was going to say, when I asked you about that, you're looking for a toilet, or if you find some, they're all full.
Yes.
You can't use them.
Yes, actually, we recently did a dream about that for a column that we do where... someone was looking for a toilet, and all of them were full. Like, she either couldn't find them, or when she found them, they were all full. So what that's indicating is that there's a recognition that there's things that need to be released in their life, but that, you know, mentally and emotionally, they're sort of constipated in a literal sense, is that it is very similar, that where you recognize you need to let go of something, but you just can't let it go. It's kind of like when we were talking about things ending up in our unconscious mind or the basement.
Yeah.
It's usually things that end up in the basement or things we know aren't really useful to us anymore, but we just can't bear to let go of them because we keep thinking, well, maybe there's going to be some use for it later. So then we stick it in the basement, and then, you know, we forget about it, and then we stick two more things in, and, you know, so we get all filled up with things that we keep thinking we're going to need or we might have a use for, but really they're just no longer productive for us. And so when we're hanging on to those things, it starts to back us up. And then what happens in our life is that our creative energies get backed up too, where you start to notice your manifestations are taking longer, or there's something that seems like it's right there, you're just about have it, but you just can't bring it all the way out into your life. And that's when our energy gets constipated. So you know, is indicating look in your life for what you're just attached to that's no longer productive and just let it go.
I know it's
move
kind
on.
Of gross to talk about that, but also sometimes it's all over the floor when you go into a bathroom. You don't even want to go in there because it's all over the floor.
Oh, right. Yeah, that would be a more extreme example of where, you know, it's so backed up that it's just kind of like... coming out all over your life, and you've probably met people who just sort of emotionally, it's like they're just kind of like all over the place all of a sudden, you know,
okay.
Without being too graphic, but, you know, it's like when people get backed up that much, that's when they have these emotional outbursts, and they just, They just let everything kind of spill out and sort of uncontrolled.
So something has to give.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
I'm sorry, listeners, I didn't want to get into gross subjects, but I imagine you probably have the dreams, too.
These are common things.
It's a really common dream that everybody... Oh, what about in dream when you're running, and sometimes you can't... Well, it's both kinds. You're either running and running, or otherwise you're trying to run and you can hardly move.
That's usually what it is to me. It's like those movies where they have the hallway where it gets really long and you're just trying and you're just grabbing the floor trying to move. You can't run.
Either way, those kind of dreams?
Well, running indicates, and in other words, running and not getting where you want to go or swimming at slow motion, is an example of the person who has set some goals that day. Or maybe they haven't set goals, so they feel like a chicken running around all day with their head cut off. They're running around, but they're not getting anywhere. So the person really needs to set goals and focus so they can be efficient in their day and get done what they need to get done. So that person would benefit from visualization, planning, goal setting. And then when they run in their dream, they'd be sprinting across the finish line instead of, not getting anywhere.
Yeah, I think
there's another aspect of that, too, when you were talking about, like, grabbing the floor, and sometimes we have that sense like we're moving in slow motion, we can't get our legs to move. It's almost like they're stuck in molasses or weighted down with heavy weights or something. And sometimes, too, that can reflect where our experiences have shifted, but we haven't shifted our consciousness really to catch up to our current experiences. And so, like in your life, one example of how that might show up, like maybe somebody in high school and college kind of really liked to party and have a good time all the time. And now, they're a responsible manager of a company or something like that, but they still kind of have this tendency of wanting to act like, they were in the past, and so they haven't really caught up to who they are or what their current experience is yet.
That's it. Yeah.
All right. Well, what about insects, especially spiders?
Again, that would go back to the habit. Any type of insect would be a habit, and a spider, is a habit that we would be kind of frightened of, perhaps, or dislike, or wish wasn't there. like we all do habitual things that we wish we didn't, like worrying. I worry too much. I wish I didn't do that. And then the spider pops up in the dream. Wish I didn't do that. I wish that spider wasn't there. It's annoying. That's what that would represent.
It seems like spiders are very common in dreams.
Yes, I would say so, because it represents one of those habits that most people do that, they dislike, they're unpleasant, and they're kind of, just kind of a pain in the neck, probably not going to kill you, but just not too pleasant. And so, it could be somebody who lives in the past. You start reminiscing about the past and, it's not always pleasant, so.
And if we look at an interesting thing about the... Oh, what was that?
No, go ahead, Patrick. Go ahead.
Oh, well, kind of an interesting thing about spiders, too, is most people have a reaction to them that is way out of proportion to the actual danger from them.
Yeah.
And so, there's very few spiders that are actually poisonous, that are really going to harm you, but they are very useful, so it can also indicate there's, some kind of habit in your life that maybe you are misinterpreting or misunderstanding or having some kind of a reaction to that could possibly be useful to you, too. But, again, how you react to that habit is going to reveal more about it.
Okay, I'm just trying to pull out some that are common.
Yeah, what
here.
She was starting to say is I made a comment that I don't remember having spiders. I don't have many spider dreams. I have more snake dreams than spider dreams.
Okay. All right. Well, what about, this is probably what a lot of the listeners would associate with, what about having dreams about people who are deceased, who have already passed over?
Oh, well, this is a really fascinating dream, because there's two ways that this can show up. And the first way we would recommend interpreting the person that shows up as a normal symbol, and then that would be an aspect of yourself. So you'd ask yourself, how would I describe this person in one or two words? And that gives you a clue as to the part of your personality that you're dealing with. And so you might say, oh, you know, she was so generous and caring, or, you know, he was really intelligent but kind of aloof. And so that gives you a little bit of a clue in terms of how you were expressing yourself or what you were dealing with. But there's also another aspect of that that I find really the more fascinating experience, which is we can also have what's called visitation experiences in our dreams.
Yeah.
And so how we can identify those is that when the person shows up in the dream and they're a symbol, which means your mind is projecting that image as a way of communicating a part of yourself that you've been dealing with, then they just talk to you like a normal person, normal day, and maybe, you know, do regular things with you that you might experience with somebody during the day. But when a person who is deceased actually shows up in your dream, and we would describe it as a visitation experience, a lot of times they'll experience the person just standing over them and just smiling, and, you know, maybe sometimes they'll be dreaming and they'll be laying in the bed and the person just shows up and is standing over them smiling and they can't really hear what they're saying. But then when you can hear what they're saying, you're more tuned in to them and being able to communicate with them telepathically. And when they talk, a lot of times you don't notice their lips moving, because when a deceased person is there visiting with you, it is more of a telepathic communication experience. So there is really no reason for them to be moving their lips, because they're just communing with you telepathically. And so those are the signs that we would look for whenever a deceased person has visited you.
And I have a lot. I get a lot of mail from people who say a deceased member of their family comes in their dreams and is giving them messages. And they don't want
to know
if that's
real
or not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have worked with a lot of people that have had visitation experiences. A lot of times the messages are very reassuring, you know, don't worry about me, everything's fine, it's really, you know, I'm great,
yeah.
Or, you know, maybe they were really ill before they passed, and so, you know, they reassure them, you know, I'm great now, I can walk again, you know, it's, you know,
yeah.
I'm really much better off now, all these kinds of things are frequent messages that people receive. But they can be much more personal and much more specific, too. So we've heard a lot of different experiences that people have had.
And
yeah,
we explained to people
jar,
that.
They might say, I go look in the cookie jar, I hid some money there or something.
Oh, yeah. That would be great.
And when we're sleeping, we're very receptive because we're on the astral plane. And so it's
yeah.
a great time for deceased people to contact us, because usually during the day our mind is so busy we're not picking up messages or clues from them. So they can only get to us when we're sleeping.
Uh-huh. So I think sometimes they may be real contacts, too, and not just symbols.
Exactly. Yes, they can be the actual entity who's coming to visit. And whenever people can't hear them, usually the person is trying to communicate something, but for whatever reason, maybe they're just kind of taken aback. Sometimes people are a little bit scared by it the first time that they experience it. And so it's difficult to really tune in to their thoughts and be able to pick up on their message. And so usually when they're standing there smiling, they're really trying to communicate something, but you're just not picking it up. So I have had some people I've worked with where the first time it kind of scared them, and then when I explained what was happening, you know, with subsequent visits, they were able to relax a little bit more and realize it wasn't anything scary, and then they were able to pick up the message from the person.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. Okay, what about lucid dreaming? What do you have to say about that? You know, lucid dreaming is whenever you are aware, I'm just telling the listeners this in case they don't know, when you are aware during the dream that you are dreaming and you can change the dream. That's lucid dreaming.
Yes, that's a great ability to have, to become, bring your awareness into the dream. So a lot of people experience it simply as they're in the dream and something happens and they have awareness that that's not what it's like in their waking life. Like somebody appears in the dream who's fatter, let's say, than in their waking life. And say, oh, well, I recognize that person, but in my waking life, he doesn't look quite like that. That's how it often shows up for me, that I have some awareness in the dream. We do teach techniques to people in our classes as well as in the book as to how to become more lucid in the dream. For example, before going to bed, we teach people to find or identify an anchor symbol so that when they're in their dream, when they see that symbol, they'll become awake. So, for example, one student of ours we taught, she decided to use her hand, and that when she saw her hand in the dream, that would be her clue that this was only a dream, and she would have more awareness in the dream.
That's sounding like Inception.
Like what?
Yes,
Inception.
A little bit, exactly. And it can be beneficial for people who have recurring dreams because the dream keeps recurring and they're not getting the message. So in their waking life, if they're not getting the message in the dream state, for example, they can look at the dream and say, what am I supposed to get here that I'm not getting? Mm-hmm. And bringing awareness into the dream can help you end a cycle of recurring dreams.
There is one caution that we always give, too, though, and usually when we teach lucid dreaming, we teach it as more of an advanced skill because we always recommend for someone to learn what the dream means before you start changing things in the dream.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people can wake up and become conscious in the dream, and then they might start changing things around without really understanding the dream. And so sometimes, like if you're being chased by an animal, you know, for example, you could kill the animal and then... So you've made a change in a habit within your consciousness, but then it turns out that habit was something that was really very productive for you, but maybe you were kind of apprehensive about it. So we do recommend to understand the dreams first before you start making a lot of changes.
I found in my dreams, the point that I become aware, usually I wake up right after that, the point that I start changing things, that I just wake up.
Yeah, that's very common, too.
Yeah.
Lucid dreaming is definitely an art, as well as a science, because a lot of times when the emotions start becoming unsettled, or it doesn't necessarily have to be even in a negative way. You could just become really excited that you're waking up in the dream, and that excitement just kind of brings you right out of it, and then you wake up. So it is important to learn how to maintain control of your emotional state, because you are right there in the emotions when you're dreaming. So you know, even more so than when you're awake, you're right there in that emotional experience most of the time when we're dreaming. So when that becomes really disrupted, it'll bring us out.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I had one where it turned into a chase dream. You know, I don't like those. So you're running and running and running. And all of a sudden, I was thinking, wait a minute, I don't have to do this. This is a dream. So I just stopped. Mm-hmm. And I could just turn around, and I could walk, or I could do anything I want. I said, this is just a dream. I don't have to be running all over the place.
And then
and that's great. And, you know, that you're able to do that, because that also, you'll see that same ability in your life. And so when we start developing that lucid ability, it reflects those changes happening in our conscious awareness and control in our daily life, too, where you're recognizing you have control of your mind. So maybe there's a part of yourself that you're running from, and then all of a sudden you realize, you know, why am I doing this? You know, this isn't something that's real and tangible and really going to hurt me. I'm just, you know, running away from it for no reason. So then you just kind of stop yourself. And, you know, in the dream it reflects the same thing. So we really see it a direct mirror reflection between our waking life and our dream life, which is why, you know, we recommend learning about your dreams, because it helps to shed light on what's happening during the day and in your consciousness.
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to bring up one last thing here, nightmares. I always think of nightmares as just you're really trying to get your attention.
Yes, you're exactly right. Nightmares are trying to get our attention, and they do most of the time. And so basically what that means is that in their waking life, the person in some way is feeling like a victim or that they don't have control over their life, because in a nightmare, some big animal or monster is chasing you, and you feel like the victim, and you have no power to do anything about it. So that's why children often have nightmares, because, for example, they may feel that adults are making all the choices and decisions in their life, and so they don't feel they have any control over their own life. Or when it occurs to an adult person, it's kind of the victim mentality. They feel like, oh, I'm just a victim. I can't do what I want to do in my life. And so that's, you know, this monster coming at them, and they're this helpless person in the dream. So we always recommend to the person to, you know, take charge of their life, you know, set goals. And so they do reclaim their power. For children, we recommend to the parents, let the child make some decisions and choices in their life so that they feel they have more say. One example was a mother told me her daughter was having nightmares and never had them before. And I said, well, had anything changed within the family unit? And the mother said that she had been single for 4 years and now was just starting to date. And so the daughter was experiencing, you know, fear over this and feeling out of control,
yeah,
like she was losing her mother, that there was nothing she could do about it. So,
Okay. Yeah,
so it's just a way to get our attention.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Okay, we're coming down. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I want to tell people we're having our transformation conference here in Springdale, Arkansas, starts next Friday. And Catherine and Patrick are going to be there. They're going to be speakers, and they're also going to give a workshop.
Several workshops. You're doing readings and workshops. You're doing all kinds of things. Can you kind of give everybody an idea of all? You have a lot of things going on.
An overview of what you're going to be doing at the conference.
All right. Yeah, we are going to be pretty busy while we're there. Well, I'm giving a presentation on our book, Naked in Public, on Friday, and then Catherine is going to be presenting on her topic with her relationship book on Saturday. And then we're also going to make ourselves available at certain times to do readings and also different services. Catherine's going to be doing some services related to her life purpose work, and then I'm also going to be offering some energy healings and have a quantum touch and bioenergetic synchronization available. Plus, we have a slot where we're going to do a group of intuitive readings. So we're going to offer past life readings because that's directly related to the relationship work and the life purpose work. So either a past life reading or a past life crossing, which is a past life shared with another individual. And I believe we have 4 spots available. So they'll be done individually, but everybody will do them together as a group because we do an Edgar Cayce-style reading format. So instead of doing a reading where she just goes into the inner levels to give the reading, I actually take her under completely. So she lets go completely, and then I conduct the reading process at that point, just like Edgar Cayce did. And then also Monday she's giving a workshop. So if people want a more in-depth look at the life purpose work, and especially related to relationships, that's on Monday. And then also on Tuesday, I'm taking a group of individuals into a deeper look of dreams and you know, giving them some direct feedback on dreams they've had and how to really start their dream interpretation learning process.
Yes.
Okay.
They will not be taking any breaks.
We're giving a talk to. Okay, well, we're coming to the time to stop, but if people want to contact you, how do you want them to do it?
Well, they can contact us through our website, which is www.catherineandries.com. That's K-A-T-H. Yep, KATHRYNANDRIES.com. We also have our school website, which is www.intuitiveschool.com, intuitiveschool.com. And you may also reach us by phone at 847 877-7593 or see us in person at the Transformation Conference.
Yeah, which is coming up very fast.
And we have links to your sites also from your author pages on Ozark.
Wonderful.
The Ozark Mountain page, a publishing page. Okay, so, well, it's not going to be very long now. We'll be able to see you. And I hope everybody out there listening that can come will come. It's going to be a very good conference.
Absolutely. This is all amazing stuff. Come and get all your information.
And we are bringing Robert Bobal over from Spain. He's in Ancient Aliens and many other TV shows. And he's a best-selling author of archaeology and all these kind of things. He's our keynote speaker. So it's going to be a fascinating conference, and it's 3 days, June the 20th to the 23rd.
22nd.
Okay, these workshops are in there after that. The 20th to the 22nd in Springdale, Arkansas, and all the information is on our website.
Yes, OzarkMT.com, and it has a link over to the Transformation Conference, or you can go right to the Transformation Conference website, which is transformation-conference.com.
Okay.
Everything you want.
Well, we're going to have to sign off. Catherine and Patrick, I really thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks very much for having us on.
And we'll be seeing you soon.
It's been very, very informative. Very good. This is a good show.
Yeah, okay.
Never mind.
All right. And we want to thank everybody for listening tonight. And good night, everyone.